We're putting your financial house in order with Dominion Investment Group. Joined today by Project Lifesaver Chief Saunders. And Greg, as I shared with you, I just got back from the national convention out in Nevada. And I got to tell you, as much as you can read and hear about the things that Project Lifesaver does, nothing can put words on it to be out there, be around the local agencies, the policemen, the sheriffs, the fire department in the field, and hear the stories, hear these guys' commitment. Because you know, they don't get paid to do this stuff. It's voluntary, so they're committing their time to help out the community as they do every day in their employment. Another part of that, though, which brings in our other guests, is I'm always amazed at the stories. You know, you hear about families that are touched by Alzheimer's, families that are touched by autism, and you know, in many ways, Greg, it's almost out of sight and out of mind because we're not dealing with it every day.
Yeah.
And which really brings in our next guest. Our next guest is Candy Spitz. Candy actually spoke at the convention, and I immediately cornered it afterward and says, look, we've got to have you in on the radio show, and that's why we got her in here today. But Candy, who's a local here in Florida, she came up in the entertainment business, has actually been a radio person, which means we can all leave once she starts talking because she can run the rest of the show. And again, for our listeners up in Hampton Roads, the Norfolk area, which you are familiar with, is more of a Hard Rock area. Candy's husband is of the Anthrax band, which was very popular up as I grew up. Interesting also, Candy is the mother of twin boys, two boys, 5 years old, Brendan and Jaden, who are affected by autism. And Candy, welcome to the program. We appreciate having you here today.
Good morning. Thank you.
Candy, I'm going to put something out on the table, and not that I want this to be the show, but I want to share something with you for myself as sort of a person in the community, not having someone affected by autism in my family. We've heard the debate of what can trigger autism, yeah, the scientific end. You know the debate and you know where I'm heading because it's, mm-hmm, where you started your presentation. And Greg, I'm one of those people that sit out there and go, you know, you hear all these reports. Reports came out again, was it a year ago or something, a major report? You look, there's nothing dealing with vaccines. And I'm going to say, I'm not going to have that discussion on the show, but I want Candy to share her experience because listening to her experience kind of made me step back and go, you know, you got to wonder. And again, I'm not, I don't want any listeners to call in. I don't want to get any letters as to what side of the debate, because I got to tell you, I really don't care. But what I can tell you is I can share Candy's story with you, or Candy's going to share her story with you, and I can tell you other people with a similar story.
Yeah. Well, we've been on both sides of the debate. In the beginning, my kids were born perfectly healthy, normal, first full-term babies. They were perfect, and they were perfect until they were a year and a half. And over a two-week window, they lost everything. They lost the ability to walk, talk, play, eat. I couldn't kiss them, hug them. They would.
But share what you say normal. I mean,
yeah, normal. They were doing TV and movies. They were smiling, laughing, doing everything ahead of schedule. Crawling, walking, talking. They did it all. They were incredible. And I said over a two-week window, they lost everything. One day they stopped eating. Then they started to kind of not look at us, but we thought, you know, they're almost two. It's terrible twos, whatever else is happening.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of little things.
They're
boys, they're twins. And in that two-week window, they lost every skill. And the hardest part was there was a point where you couldn't kiss them. You couldn't go near them. And then they were just blank. They were looking through you. It was like almost as if you didn't exist. And as a parent, it was heartbreaking. Because this was 3.5 years ago.
Right.
Autism was not a daily word.
Mm-mm.
I mean, now everybody knows somebody with autism, but it was just not in your face. And I didn't know what was going on. And, you know, your family shuts down. My husband shut down.
Sure.
And he threw himself into music. But then you start thinking back, what happened? And for us, initially, it was vaccines. You're hearing Jenny McCarthy. You're hearing all these stories out there saying, oh, the vaccine triggered autism. And I said, well, you know, when they had their 12-month shot, which is the big cocktail,
mm-hmm,
shot, and we were living in New York, which is a very aggressive shot schedule, they did have a bad reaction. We watched the high fevers. We watched the very lethargic, you know, the crazy kids that were just laying there now. And you start thinking, okay, maybe, you know, maybe it is the vaccine. And for a good 6-month window, that's what we attributed to. And you place the blame on yourself as a parent that,
sure,
I caused autism.
Right.
They were born perfect. But then, logically speaking, there was a good 4 to 5 month window where they were slowly losing their skills, that I don't think you noticed it as much then. Mm-hmm. So you can't really say the vaccine caused it. Could it have triggered it? I don't know. That's for the scientists. That's for the researchers.
Yeah.
That's for everybody. But on the other side, what we started noticing was that was the same time in 2009 where the FDA started regulating BPA in mm-hmm. your plastics and your mm-hmm. foods. It was in everything of theirs. Every bottle, pacifier, cup, plate, every bottle of water that I had while I was pregnant. And I went off the deep end. I threw out everything in the house. My husband was in California recording an album. I'm calling frantic mother saying, okay, not only did I give them autism with the vaccine, I'm slowly poisoning my children, you know, giving them plastic. But there weren't glass bottles. There weren't these things in 2009. You know, you thought you were giving them the best of everything.
Right.
So we pulled all plastics away from them. And in 48 hours, they started making sounds for the first time. Called up their doctors, called up everybody we knew and said, is this possible? And they said, yeah. Once that barrier was gone, you know, maybe it opened up something in the brain. The damage has already been done. You don't know what damage has been done. And if plastics caused it, what is pesticides? What are all these other chemicals that are being added to our food? So we still side on both sides of this debate, you know, as a spokesperson for Autism Speaks as well. You know, I'm glad that they're doing all that they can to research vaccines and research environmental so I don't have to worry about it. But I personally feel that environmental has a lot more play in what our kids are going through.
Well, and you can't deny that there's some trigger. And again, like mm-hmm. I said, I walked in and have been of the opinion, oh, hey, the scientist said X, Y, Z, it must be that. But having walked out, and you weren't the only speaker, mm-hmm. several speakers said the same thing. So, look, you can say what you want to. I'm not going to debate the issue. But right after those shots, right after, here is what we experienced.
Yeah.
There had to have been a trigger because, like you said, everything was normal, if not advanced, mm-hmm. up to that point.
Yeah.
And I don't have the answer either, but it does make me wonder.
Well, you know, and you look at a lot of the major athletes that have come out for Autism Speak. Well, actually, Ernie Els just mm-hmm. won the British Open, mm-hmm. lives right here on Hope Sound. And, you know, he's going through this as well. And, you know, it's just when you start hearing the numbers of children being in the hundreds, you know, 100 to 1, or rather than 10,000 or 1,000,000 to 1. I mean, that's what's a staggering.
And now it's 1 in 88, 1 in 54 boys. That's the latest number as of April this year.
Wow.
So you've got to wonder what's happened. We see these numbers such radically change. You've mm-hmm. seen this concentration. And I don't think it's better science. We're diagnosing it. What is it? What are the triggers? And like you said, what could it be? Could it mm-hmm. be chemicals and plastics, foods, et cetera? So many things that we are exposed to today, our children are exposed to today, that our grandparents, our great-grandparents never were exposed to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you when I started this program 14 years ago and I first heard about autism, the figures were 1 in 10,000. And in just that short evolution of time, which has been roughly 10 years since we really got into autism, look at it, 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 88.
It's scary.
I mean, it is scary. And where's it going to end?
Right.
Because right now, as you said, and Candy has elaborated on, I don't think anybody can really say what triggers it or what causes it. As you said, we had speakers at Project Lifesaver. We try to stay on top of this as much as possible. Not that we're going to take sides, but it comes to the point where it affects us on how we deal with them,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know. But we still have got no answers. In 10 years, there's been no answers. So, yeah, I think we've got an explosion, and this is what we're dealing with.
And certainly as a parent, like you said, it's scary because you don't know. You don't know where you're going. You don't know what the trigger is. And again, not knowing what side of the issue you're on, Paul was saying there's something there. We just don't know what it is. And of course, as a parent, I can imagine, I self-actualize it too, how you beat it, because like anything that happens to a child, you start to wonder, what did I do? What
yeah. mm-hmm.
what could I have done different, et cetera?
Yeah. So I finally hit a point where I had to say, I don't actually care what caused it.
Right.
And that's where one of the other speakers and I kept going back and forth on, because he was a doctor and his side is what causes. I don't actually care what causes.
Well, this parent,
my kids already
yeah.
have it. You know, there's nothing I can do to correct what they have. You know, all I can do is make a better life for them and figure out their strengths, their weaknesses, and how they can function in society.
so many people don't realize what you deal with on a daily basis, and what I want to get to later, which is what people should know when they encounter someone with special needs, with autism. But my wife turned to me and she said, the next time I ever get upset with dealing with our kids, remind me of what we just listened to. And I think that's very true. But I want our listeners to know, what are some of the things that you've dealt with in the last 3 years, three plus years in your family?
Well, we've been through every spectrum here, every side of the spectrum, from my kids being extremely low functioning to the incredible, happy, loving, affectionate kids they are.
Explain what is low functioning. I know what that means, but our listeners don't.
When they were at their lowest point, they would just rock in a corner all day. They would hit one toy, this ball popper that made this air sound, and they would just rock. They didn't play. They didn't interact. They didn't acknowledge you. And we've gone from that. Mind you, we were doing 12 to 14 hours a day of intense therapy with them. But we've gone from that extreme to they just turned 5. They laugh and play and giggle and kiss you and hug you, and they'll kiss strangers. They'll run right up to you. But mentally, they're probably on the level of a 2-year-old. Educationally, they're on the level of a 7 or 8-year-old. So you have all the extremes. So we have a kid that's still in diapers that can't eat solid food that would be drinking out of a bottle if I would allow it, who drinks a liquid protein apple juice all day.
Wow.
Who can spell, 10-letter words, can solve puzzles, can crack computer codes. So you go through there's a whole spectrum. And most of our children are very advanced. And that's where this almost stubbornness, this battle comes in, because there's so much that they want to say, there's so much they want to do, and they can't figure out how to get it out. Now, my kids are just turning 5, and they just started speaking in the last 3 months or so. And they're speaking on the level of like an 18-month-old.
Wow.
Which is very frustrating for them, very frustrating for you as a parent. But what people don't realize is they see us go. I mean, I take them everywhere. They're at Disney, SeaWorld. They're at the zoo every weekend. They're always out. And unless you're seeing a behavioral problem, which looks like a tantrum, mine, thank goodness, are babies still at 5. And I'm tiny. They're very short. So they look like, they're just having a little 2 or 3-year-old tantrum. But they don't realize the prep work to get them to that point is so intense that I can spend, I'll go home today and I'll be working on tomorrow to get everything perfect, because every minute of every day has to be exactly the same. So whether I'm home, I'm in a hotel, whether I'm traveling, from the second I open their bedroom door, I have to say the exact same words or they snap. Like, everything is structured.
So it's almost like a Groundhog Day. You're really not kidding. Every day.
Every single day is exactly the same. From the time I wake up until the time I go to bed, I say, I open the door and have to say good morning, wait for them to repeat back good morning, have to say hi. Once I say hi, then I can turn off the sound machine. I can turn off the monitors. I can jump out of bed, get a diaper. But if you don't do those things in that order, they're going to throw themselves on the ground and they can't process the next step of the day. Everything has to stay structured. We count the steps as we go down. One at a time, I take one kid down, the 7 steps down, then 10 steps down, turn on the TV. Same thing every day. From where I place their cup, it has to be the exact same cup, placed on the same spot of the floor. Every little thing will trigger. But as long as with my children, I know what their breaking points are or what their little triggers are. So as long as every day is exactly the same, life is good. Mm-hmm. You have minor hiccups, but I can't say have a babysitter come watch them. I don't have a nanny. I don't have grandparents that could be there, because nothing can ever deviate from this system that you have in place. So to the outside person, they're not that bad. They're functioning just fine. Well, at home, yes. But say you go to Disney World and Jaden, one of my twins, has to get on a ride. Well, he only wants the Dumbo that has the pink bow. And he can't process that you're getting whatever ride they tell you to get on.
Right.
They just can't make that change. So every little thing is a trigger, and it's just how you handle that trigger. And half the time, it's just a smile on my face or sunglasses on my eyes that I just pretend not to notice the stares. You learn to deal with it.
Well, and I think, speaking from general part, you mentioned the stares or anything else, I even was educated, as much as I've been exposed to Project Lifesaver, every time I hear someone like you speak. Because, Greg, as us as parents that haven't dealt with that, it's out of sight, out of mind, and you don't realize necessarily what another parent's going through. Like you said, you're in a whole nother world.
Well, there's little things. A common trait you always see is flapping. When the kid gets excited, it looks like they're shaking their arms, like they're going to fly away.
Oh, okay.
It's called flapping.
Right.
Almost all autistic children do it. They get overstimulated. Sometimes they're just happy. Now, to an outside person, I'll go to the zoo, and one of my sons loves spinning things. So there's fans at the Palm Beach Zoo, and he'll stare at them, and he is just so happy when he sees it that he's flapping.
Right.
And parents of typical children are looking at me like, what is wrong with your child? Now, for me, I don't mind those stares. My kid's happy. It's a good thing.
Right.
He's not having a meltdown. This is bringing pure joy to him. And as a parent, as long as he's happy, that's all that matters to me. But you get stared at for every, you know, odd thing as you're throwing your child over your shoulder or trying to get them onto a ride because right. you know once that ride starts, he's going to have a great time. He just has to get past that. And parents are giving you advice. Parents are, you know, they're quick to judge when they shouldn't be.
How do you handle the pressure? I mean, just hearing you just seems like, you know, a day-to-day activity.
It's hard.
Would be pressure packed.
It's very. I think I just hit a point where I'm calm about the whole subject. And I've done my research. I work for two great organizations now that, you know, I know the latest and breaking and everything. My kids go to a great school here in South Florida, the Palm Beach School for Autism, where they're getting their best care, their best therapy. So for me, it's not as stressful like the what's going to happen next. And I think also for me is if they were stuck where they were when they were two, I wondered then, you know, how am I going to live the rest of my life taking care of this? Because it didn't look like there was really any hope. Now, 3.5 years later, now mind you, they act like a two-year-old at five. But if they were stuck where they are right now, I could function the rest of my life. And they're happy and playing and talking and self-sufficient for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not unbearable. But, you know, there was a time before even words came out where you're thinking, you know, what am I going to do? I don't know that they're even getting what I'm telling them. You know, how do you cope the rest of your life with a full, I mean, I have lots of friends who have full-grown children now. They're 27, 28 years old who still act like that. Now, how do you relate? How do you handle this?
Well, I can't imagine. And even something you shared more out in Nevada was, and of course, any parent listening to us, you can't help but self-actualize it. And you started talking about your kids not looking at you, not talking to you. You mm-hmm. couldn't touch them. I'm sitting there going, oh, my God. Yeah. I'm sitting there trying to even fathom that. And I can't even envision what that's yeah. like or how you deal with that yeah. Emotionally.
Yeah,
when I
emotionally.
Mean deal with it, you're going to deal with whatever's in right. front of you. But inside when it's all done, I can't imagine.
Well, on the positive side, you get one thing I love about autism, and I can say there are things about autism that are truly a blessing, is you actually take the time to notice every little thing that your kid does. Normally, you know, a five-year-old, whatever happens to him, he's watching a TV show and he's singing a song, and you're like, oh my God, can you be quiet? Like, mommy's got to work. Mommy's got to do this. You are so in tune to every little step that it makes it all worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I might have shared in Vegas how, you know, from the time they were born, I always said the same things to them, talk to them as if they were normal, because I didn't know what they were truly getting out of right. everything. And every night I said the same things, of course, before bed. I would always say good night, give them a kiss, sweet dreams with a kiss, and mommy loves you. Always, even when they weren't there, you know, I said mm-hmm. it. And one day, and this is recent, they're just starting to talk. In the last 3 to 6 months, Brendan, who's my older twin by 2 minutes, I was doing it, and he grabbed my face when I did the good night and give him a kiss, and he grabbed my face, and he said, sweet dreams, mommy loves you, and I lost it.
Sure.
And my husband was in town, and I didn't know he could talk. He wasn't speaking at that point. And I said, so for the 5 years that I've been saying this, you're getting every single thing I'm telling you, which a lot of people don't realize their children really are, because they're just staring at us blankly, or they can't communicate. But they were getting everything, and when the time was right, it came out, and it was the best feeling in the world. And something a regular parent, when your child is talking at 9 months, you don't care. I mean, you really don't. You're 9 months like, yay, they said mama. That's
right,
nice.
Right.
At five, when you didn't think your child was ever going to speak, it's the most incredible feeling in the world.
Oh, I'm sure it's
everything. And it makes it all worthwhile.
Certainly it is. It's absolutely everything. Well, that's an incredible story. And Candy, when we come back from the break, I'd like to share, or have you share with our listeners a little bit about what they should know, because the reality is even though I'm exposed, and like you said, you get these stares and others, and then I want Chief to weigh in with what their work is on the, I guess, first responder side, because it
yes.
is an education
yes.
on the general public. And we'll be back right after this message.